Welcome to Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Ashkan Kazarian, Tech Freedom's legal fellow and your host. On today's show, we're going to talk about harm reduction policy. So it is 2018 and a lot of people are working hard to keep their New Year's resolution to give up smoking. A resolution that also made headlines was Philip Morris International's resolution of a company behind the big name cigarettes like Marlboro and Parliament. They committed to a dramatic decision to eventually stop selling cigarettes altogether in order to achieve a smoke-free future. There has been a lot written about harm reduction as a part of achieving that smoke-free future. To explain to us all the complex parts of this puzzle, we're joined by Carrie Wade, Director of Harm Reduction Policy and Senior Fellow at R Street Institute. Carrie holds a PhD in pharmacology and a master's in public health and has been working on these issues for years. Carrie, thank you for joining the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Carrie, what are harm reduction principles in general? What do they mean?
So harm reduction in general aims to reduce the negative consequences that are associated with risks and risk behaviors. It doesn't necessarily have to be associated with drug use or more controversial risks that we take every day, but it can extend to simple things like driving a car, and using a seatbelt is a great example of this.
So me putting on my seatbelt is harm reduction.
Well, I mean, you drive a car, you have a certain risk of being in a car accident, and in car accidents, you have a huge risk of being injured. So doing a simple thing like putting on a seatbelt won't necessarily decrease the risk of the accident, but it will decrease the risk of your injuries.
So what would be harm reduction when it comes to smoking?
So something that we think about when we think about tobacco use is that the most popular way to get nicotine and to use tobacco is in a combustible cigarette, which is by far the most dangerous. So harm reduction in relation to tobacco use could be something simple like switching to a non-combustible product, and whether or not that's a snuff or snus, which is a moist chew type tobacco.
So people who chew tobacco.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or using an e-cigarette or a vapor product for those who still would like to get delivered nicotine through inhaling.
So why is tobacco harm reduction important for us to consider?
Well, it's really important to consider because what a lot of people don't think about is that tobacco and cigarette use is actually responsible for the most deaths of an avoidable behavior. So opioid use is always in the news, and it's very important that we think about opioid use. But cigarette use is responsible for 480,000 deaths a year. And successful when your quit rates are less than 10%. So clearly something isn't working, and we need to find a different way to address this issue.
So let's talk a little bit more about e-cigarettes as a way of reducing the harm. Can you elaborate on how it affects our health, or on what's the difference between e-cigarettes and other ways of quitting smoking, I guess?
So when people want to quit smoking, usually what they do is they go to their doctor or do a cold turkey by themselves, which is actually the most common way to attempt to quit smoking. If you go to your doctor, you're most likely going to be steered in the direction of nicotine replacement therapy, which would be patch or gum or nicotine inhalers that pharmaceutical companies make, which can work for a lot of people, but actually they do not work for a lot of people with a success rate of less than 10%. But and then another quit aid would be medicated assisted therapy, which is varenicline or Chantix, or bupropion, which is another common medication that people can take when they're trying to quit smoking.
Mm-hmm.
So,
or they can go to someone who will just, you know, just like a witch doctor.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's no shortage of those kinds of
just some hypnosis.
Smoking. Hypnosis, behavioral therapy for sure. Yeah. So when people use these quit products, they may or may not be successful. And for those that are successful, we think that's great. For those that aren't, and then relapse to combustibles, then we would ask them to consider maybe a reduced harm product, and that would be an e-cigarette. The reason why e-cigarettes are reduced harm is because there's no combustion, there's no tar, there's drastically reduced concentrations of chemicals that the two products, combustible cigarettes and e-cigarettes, do share. And that would be like formaldehyde or acetaldehyde. So they're just not getting all of these chemicals and carcinogens that are associated with a combustible cigarette.
And those chemicals are the ones that do the most harm.
Yes.
The most damage to our body.
The chemicals that are in combustible cigarettes and the products of combustion are the ones that do the most harm.
But vaping is still unhealthy. That's at least a perception that I have as someone who's never smoked in my life, that I really haven't. My perception is that vaping is still unhealthy. Just when someone is smoking a cigarette, vaping next to me, I just, on some subconscious level, I just still think that it's somehow harming even me.
Yeah, and that's a real issue that we have, that we being tobacco harm reduction advocates have, is that there is a huge common misperception of the safety between the two products. And a lot of people think that, well, there's a few reasons for this. One is that people think that the major harm is the nicotine, which is untrue. Nicotine is a psychoactive substance and it's not great for you, but it's the products of combustion that are the most dangerous in driving all of these deaths.
So when that burns, that when you smoke a cigarette and there's a burn, that's what harms you?
Exactly.
Not nicotine as much.
Not nicotine as much. So that said, I mean, inhaling something other than fresh oxygen and fresh air is going to be not necessarily healthy. And there's a real debate about just how healthy or unhealthy e-cigarettes are. But what we need to think about is the relative risk between combustible cigarettes and e-cigarettes. And I think there's a real disservice to people to perpetuate the myth that the two are just as dangerous as each other.
So we usually try to talk about creating an even playing field for competitors. But I've heard and I've read a lot of rhetoric that we should want to favor vaping industry over tobacco industry. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that the point is not necessarily to favor one industry over the other, mom and pop shops versus big so-called big tobacco industry. The point is really to favor less harmful products over more harmful products. And we know that combustible cigarettes are the most dangerous. Larger tobacco companies like Philip Morris or RJ Reynolds, they all have some sort of e-cigarette or other reduced risk product, and that's what we favor. So we favor the product equally over the whoever is distributing the product.
Just because of, well, not benefits, but less damage that can be created by the products that we use for basically the same effect. I don't know. Listeners, comment on our podcast and tell us if you've smoked real cigarettes and you've smoked e-cigarettes and if it gives you the same, I guess, satisfaction. Yes. Because I cannot comment on that part. I would actually like to know that.
Well, one thing I know that is common is that in the vape shop, you can have a more custom e-cigarette that is more custom to your wants and needs. Mm-hmm. And the products that are created by the bigger industries are generally a one-size-fits-all kind of product. But both have a place in this world, and both should be equally favored.
Yeah. So what are the regulations that vaping industry has on them right now, just in general strokes? In the U.S., what do vaping little mom-and-pop shops and the big companies encounter when they want to have their product on the market?
So some of the current regulations is just that, in general, e-cigarettes and e-vapor products are classified as tobacco products. So these products have to be produced in accordance with existing tobacco laws.
And I'm guessing those are pretty strict.
Yes, they can be. So one issue that we have on a federal level is the predicate date. And the predicate date is that for products to be on the market after 2007, they have to prove a substantial equivalence to products that were on the market before 2007. Where this is an issue for e-cigarettes is that e-cigarettes really didn't exist before 2007. So right now it applies to cigars and pipe tobacco and cigarettes, and that's well and good because there was no shortage of those products before 2007. After 2007, e-cigarettes kind of became a thing. Now it's it will be difficult for these companies to stay in business after this predicate date is enforced.
So yeah, this regulation just says unless the product was created and was on the market before 2007, it can be sold after, like these days. So they're basically stopping innovation. It just sounds like it.
It's exactly what it is, stopping innovation, and that's a real issue. That's not to say they can't be on the market. They just have to, in order to stay on the market. And this date has changed many times over the last year.
Oh, so they keep expanding the deadline.
Yeah, so they keep expanding the deadline and reconsidering the effects of this predicate date. And there's a few, there's the Cole Bishop Amendment, which aims to change the predicate date to 2016, which would allow a lot of these e-cigarettes to prove substantial equivalence. But if they can't prove substantial equivalence, then you can go down the PMTA path, which is the pre-market tobacco application. The real problem with this is that it's hugely expensive and it will put a lot of small businesses out of business.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of small vape shops around DC and in other cities that, at least on the surface, don't look like they are part of a big corporation. They look like a little, you know, small run business. So is there a difference in approach to the vaping industry in US and let's say UK or anywhere else in Europe?
Yes, there is, in fact. The major difference between the UK and the US is that the UK has a much more broad acceptance of e-cigarettes and broad acceptance of tobacco harm reduction as a principle. So their Public Health England report that was issued in 2015, which is where we get the number 95% safer, and that's quoted all over the place, and this is the origin of that.
So wait. So vaping is 95% safer?
Yes.
Than smoking.
That's the current estimates. At least 95% safer.
And this report was produced by?
By Public Health England and the Royal College of Physicians.
Which is part of their kind of government structure, as far as
yes.
I understand.
Yes.
Okay. That's fascinating. So that's 95% safer.
Mm-hmm. So this would actually put an e-cigarette on par with long-term use of the patch or long-term use of the gum, and that's or nicotine gum. And that's kind of...
That's the way what people we, get.
That's the way people
smoking.
Get. Yeah, it's the way people stop smoking. So it should. It really does put it in perspective.
To wrap up, what would you want our listeners to take away? If there was, you know, few like bullet points, what is harm reduction? Why is it important? Why should they care?
Well, first, I would like to people to take away that harm reduction is an important way to decrease the consequences associated with risky behaviors, and that it doesn't have to be a moralistic judgment on people, and it doesn't have to be controversial. But specific to tobacco harm reduction, what I really would like people to know is that e-cigarettes do have a place in tobacco harm reduction, and they are safer than combustible cigarettes, and that really needs to be acknowledged by the FDA and the CDC and NIH.
Sounds like there's a lot of work that our government should do to look more into these issues, these important health issues, because there's a huge amount of population that still smokes in the United States, even with all the restrictions. I was just in California. You couldn't walk down the street there smoking, which my cousin told me. So it's still a big question, and I hope that in 2018, as some corporations very consciously committed to doing better, our government would do better too. To wrap up the show, I wanted to ask you, Carrie, to share with our listeners a little bit about your journey to being part of this policy area, and how did you end up in D.C., and what made you want to work on this issue. I mean, you have a PhD, you have a master's, you could have been doing anything.
Well, I think that's an interesting question. So I'll, my background is actually in opioid pharmacology, and I did a lot with pain, chronic pain. And we're looking at biological mechanisms of chronic pain and whether or not opioids can exacerbate or protect, treat chronic pain. And this is in biological systems, so on a very basic level, on a cellular level. From that, I wanted to learn more about addiction, so I did a postdoc at Scripps Research Institute in San Diego. From there, I really thought that having a policy background would be more influential than doing basic science research in the lab. So I did. I went to Johns Hopkins and did a master's in public health. And from there, and my focus there was also on opioid harm reduction. What's interesting about that is throughout this whole time, my background in opioids, it never occurred to me that these lessons that we learn in opioids could be extended to tobacco. And when I started working in DC, this issue became important to me because of the sheer volume and the sheer volume of smokers that are in this country and the influence that you can have on such an important issue.
Across the, you know, the researchers and academia and the policy, would you say there are a lot of women that work on this issue? Is it 50-50? Is it there a few?
It is definitely not 50-50. No, there's a lot of younger women
who are entering
this area. And I'm really happy to be a part of that generation of people of women who are coming into this area.
Well, that's amazing. Thank you so much for coming on our show and sharing all this knowledge with us. You can find Tech Freedom on Facebook and Twitter at Tech Freedom. You can look up Carrie's work. We're going to link to it in show notes and on our streets website. Thank you for joining the show. Please leave us a review on iTunes so others can find it.
Thank you so much.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.